This is the New Joy of Gaming podcast. Welcome to the Joy of Gaming podcast, episode 12. My name is Rich Lepore. I'm here with Brandon Brino. Brandon, how are you doing?
Good. How about you?
Not too bad. Not too bad. I'm in the throes of loving God of War Ragnarok and excited about the God of War celebration we've got going on here on the podcast. No, God of War Ragnarok all the time.
Boy.
That's it. Yeah. You were doing some other good impressions earlier that were really good as well, but those were, I think, making fun of Kingdom Hearts. So I don't know that I like the sentiment, but man, the impressions were good. So we'll take it. But we're really excited about God of War and God of War Ragnarok, and in honor of the release of the new game that we've waited many, many years for, seems like even longer than the 4 years it was. We're going to be doing a retrospective, and we're going to dive into all of the God of War games. All the way back in 2005 when David Jaffe kicked the series off. I'm sure it probably 5-6 years before that was when the actual development started. And all the way up through what we now have today in the release of God of War Ragnarok. And so what is our plan for this retrospective? We're going to talk about each game, right?
Yeah, we'll do a little walk down memory lane with the God of War series, you know, starting with the first game on PS2 all the way up through God of War Ragnarok on PS5, if you can believe it. And
God, three, two, three, four, five. Wait, is that four generations?
Two, three, four. Yeah.
God, and PSP.
True. Yeah.
And I think there's even some other weird.
Yeah. There's some weird ones on here that I didn't even know existed, and what we found in our research.
I went back and watched videos of the stories to refresh because I mean, all I know, all I could remember really of the original games, has been so long since I played them. I played them all, but all, or at least all the mainline ones. And all I could remember was, yep, it's Kratos, and like he has sex mini games, and he has, he swings his blades of chaos, and there's other weapons.
Red like, orbs, blue orbs, green orbs.
Right, right. Blue is magic, green is health, and red is what you always wanted,
yeah.
Because that you could take with you. You know,
yeah, that's the level up stuff,
and
yeah.
you wanted that, and then I think there was yellow too, which was like rage,
gold orbs or something.
It was like rage or something like that. But and then it was just him versus gods, you know, and each game was successively more
and
brutal and violent
cool,
and
cool that you got a little bit of like an insight into Greek mythology, which you know might be like your exposure to that sort of thing. Like, yes, it's not like the 100% accurate thing, but like it's based on real mythology, right? So it was cool to like have a little entry point to that sort of thing.
And it really was. It one of the things that's interesting about God of War is it has one of the darkest. At the time, it was. See, this is, you got to remember, this is David Jaffe. He created like Twisted Metal, mm-hmm. which you know at that time was one of the darkest video games ever. This is the PS2 era when things. Twisted Metal was, I think, PS1 even though
started
right?
on PS1. Yeah.
But in the PS1 and PS2 era, this is when like video games had never been like that. You know, video games had always been up to the, at least up until PlayStation, you know, Mario and Sega and Nintendo and Sega. And so that's Mario and Sonic. And, you know, there were some things that
we got Mortal Kombat and stuff like that.
Yeah. And it was some things were getting a little darker, like Mortal Kombat Altered Beast was kind of rough. And there were some other ones.
Night Trap.
Yeah. Yeah. So there was, well, that was, yeah, it was Sega CD.
Sega CD, yeah.
Yeah, it was a little later. But regardless.
Plumbers don't wear ties or whatever on 3DO.
No, so that you're in the PS and PS2 era. Yeah, yeah, I get your point. I get your point. Plumbers don't wear ties. You asshole. Anyway, so when God of War came out, it was very controversial. Like the fact that there was a sex minigame where you have to do button presses to, and there's women who were like, oh, Kratos, and you push the button and like it was rough. It was a bad impression, I admit. but like there's that. And then like the gore and the violence, and you were ripping heads off.
Especially by God of War 3, you know, like where, you know, you're in HD watching all that. Yeah.
It's really brutal. It really was. And so there was really nothing like it. And so leave it to the guy who did Twisted Metal, which has some of the darkest plots of any video game. If you look at Twisted Metal Black, it's so dark.
Yeah, that one, yeah.
So dark and so brutal. But anyway, Jaffe said, you know, this is what people want. People want, you know, this brutal experience, and they want like a game that's really fun to play and visceral, and you hit these buttons and it's very like reactive and big and vast. Like they wanted this game to like feel larger than life.
Spectacle.
Yeah, exactly. Spectacle. That would be the number one word. Well said. And so that was kind of the watchwords going into this game, and it was unlike anything before it. There was nothing like this. And then when it came out, it really took the gaming world by storm. This is the kind of game, he was one of the early PlayStation auteurs. You know, those people who you'd hear about, and like, oh my God, David Jaffe. Like, he was famous, like in at least amongst us, right? Amongst people like us. I have a Corey Barlog story to tell when we get to God of War 2, but you may have heard it, but I don't know if I ever talked about it on the podcast. But point being that this is a really sort of impactful series that have, as PlayStation has grown up, at least from the PlayStation 2 and on, so has this series. And now, and it really has sort of shown at each stage, as you'll see as we go through the retrospective, at each stage, it really has sort of exemplified what was possible in the era from a technical perspective, what was kind of expected and pushing the envelope from a sort of gore and violence and sex perspective. And really each successive generation, there were some setbacks, but mostly each successive generation up to the ante and made it cooler and cooler as we went. So I'm really looking forward to this. It's already been fun researching for it and sort of revisiting a lot of these games and the plots, and I'm ready for it. Before we get there, though, what's your history with the series?
So, I played them all, except for the PSP ones, in terms of, like, I guess what you would consider the mainline ones.
Sure. So you've played 1, 2, 3, and Ascension?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And God of War and God of War Ragnarok, yes. Part of it. Yeah.
And then, so I played the original God of War a little bit later. Like, I didn't play it contemporaneously. I played it probably maybe like, I know like it was like in the, I had an Xbox 360 already. So it was like a few years later, after, probably like right after God of War 2 came out or something like that. I played the first and the second one. So I was a little late to the party. I was certainly aware of it. Like, I remember the idea of like the quick time event kind of button presses like during the boss fights, and that was like a very novel concept back then, because it was like, you know, you were doing these button entries, but then like what was happening on screen was sort of like very mind-blowing, you know, like that wasn't a thing really until God of War.
It's a great point. And what you bring up is, you know, we kind of bemoan quick time events, but back then it was like a feature, not a bug, right? It was like, how cool is it that I can have an FMV cutscene and that I can interact with in a way? Because I think that's kind of what it is, right?
Yeah. It wasn't like QTEs in the sense of like, well, if I don't hit the thing, then my character is going to instantly die. But it was like you had to press the buttons to like kill the boss like through that animation.
And if you would miss it, it would just like throw you back down and you'd have to do some more hits before you got a window again.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. But it was cool, and it allowed in that era when there were limitations and what could be done, it allowed them to punch way above their weight in terms of spectacle and in terms of, you know, just what you could see happen. And so you had this small, diminutive little character, Kratos. He was big, but not compared to the gods he was up against. And so you'd have these full screen. The screen would pan out. It had a dynamic camera, these games did, which was also, it could be difficult to work with, but generally speaking, very cool that it would pan around and it would show you from a very, you know, authorial, directorial perspective, you could kind of like really determine how people were viewing each vista and each area and each segment of the game. And then when it would pan out and back up, you'd see just this massive god that Kratos would be going up against. And then each successive entry, it just got bigger and more brash and bolder.
Yeah, because like the first one is very much focused on Ares, but then like obviously like the next two games like become like
Zeus.
It's Zeus, and then like killing like literally like every god in Olympus and Titans and everything else.
And then Athena plays a big role in all of them, both as an ally and an antagonist. And
but mostly an ally,
There's some twists where she's an antagonist, but yeah. It's really cool, but you love them.
I wouldn't say I ever loved this series until
really.
I wouldn't ever have described it like these are like some of my favorite games.
Oh, me neither. Me neither.
Or like my favorite games of all time. Like I liked them and I enjoyed playing them, and I looked forward to the third one. You know, after because like I said, I played like 1 and 2 at the same time, so I was looking forward to the third one. But it never was like God of War is like my thing. Like,
oh, me neither. Like I love me it. Neither. No, they're just games that I think they were, unlike a lot of games for me, they were absolute, I'm going to play that. Like it was definitive. And so they were, and that's another thing is they were zeitgeisty. I think I'm going to start copywriting that term.
I mean, but there's no question that the first like two games, like they were like some of the biggest players on the block at that point.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. They made household names, at least out of Joffe and somewhat out of Barlog, although he really became a household name with 2018. But I remember seeing videos of like behind the scenes, because I've always been into director's cut material and stuff. I remember seeing videos of him taking over the series from Joffe in the second one and all of that, and talking about it. And so he was recognizable to me even back then. But they really were. These were some of the things. Kratos became one of the absolute most definitively defining. Wow, that was redundant. He was directly connected with PlayStation.
Yeah, he became a mascot.
There you go. And actually, fun fact, we didn't talk about this in our most recent news segment, but apparently, so PlayStation All-Stars came out, and apparently, and he's one of the characters. You know, there's Sly Cooper's in it. It's a mascot.
Nathan Drake. And
right. It's a mascot Ratchet platformer, much like Smash Brothers, but it's PlayStation's version. Much like it in style, not in longevity, right? So, but anyway, Kratos was in that, etc. Yep. Apparently, there's throwaway lines in Ragnarok that actually canonizes that game and makes it official God of War canon. Yeah. Mimir says, "I heard you were in a tournament, brother," and then he goes, "Yes, I took out many adversaries or whatever." And then the director has since said that it was directly a reference to All Stars. So PlayStation All Stars is now canon in the God of War universe. Yeah, I don't know. It's for all that. It's a throwaway line.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just an Easter egg. Another thing. Now that you mentioned just like Kratos and his role as like a mascot for PlayStation, on the PSP, Soul Calibur Broken Destiny, do you remember that? He was a guest fighter.
That's right.
Soul Calibur game. So maybe that's the tournament he was referring to. No, just kidding.
Yeah, maybe.
But yeah, you know, how Soul Calibur pretty commonly like will pull in like some crazy guest character from all sorts of facets of media. Like, but Kratos was in the PSP one.
He's iconic, man. He is really iconic. And then I'm sure there was Kratos masks in Little Big Planet, mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff. I think there were even God of War maybe theme levels. I don't remember. But it was a big deal. And it still has always been a big deal. And then at a certain point, it just stopped for a long time, and then it came back.
I think he was in Mortal Kombat too.
I believe so.
On the PlayStation version.
Yeah, that's right. Because each 9. One had a specific character. So anyway, all right. Well, I think that's a good intro into the series and kind of its significance. You know, again, just two of the biggest names in gaming, at least in the yesteryear of gaming and the current day of gaming, David Joffe and Corey Barlog. They are, you know, the progenitors of this series. Barlog worked on every game, including the original. Joffe worked on the first two. But yeah. All right. Well, let's dive in. Mm-hmm. Let's dive in. So how do you have this broken down? It looks like you have first era, second era.
Yeah. So first era is what they're now referring to it in hindsight as the Greek mythology era, which is obviously the bulk of the series. And then second era is where we're currently where is the Norse mythology portion of the series.
So fun fact, as I was doing my research about this, this blew my mind. David Joffe always envisioned the series as having after Kratos takes on the Greek pantheon, that he was going to then go on and take on the Norse pantheon and the Egyptian pantheon. Mm-hmm. That is his idea.
Wow.
Is that crazy?
And they kind of allude to that in the first game, right? I think they like discover like an urn or like,
yes. Some,
and they see like all the pantheons of gods, like an Egyptian is on there. And
you're
stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. So that's cool. That's really cool. I did not know that. He really
was.
When is
he going to just start killing Jesus? That's what, I don't think it's going to go over well.
No, I think that's at least half the country will not love that, but I digress. Okay. So first era Greek mythology starts with God of War on PS2. This game was released in 2005. It was directed by David Joffe. What else about God of War?
Well, I remember it was a really big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember that this came out. I remember this like being out at around the time. Like, I could be wrong here, but like, I remember like Shadow of the Colossus and like Resident Evil 4, like being around this time. And like, I played those games, but I didn't play God of War until a couple years later, but
I
always remember hearing about it. Like,
I definitely played it at the time, and
you played it like when it came out.
Oh yeah, okay. Oh yeah, and actually to such an extent that there was a show called Cheat on G4, and I actually used like the tips on the show Cheat, which was like, you know, cheat codes and tips and stuff. It showed you where to get a bunch of the different hidden urns. where you would find a lot of like the secret power-ups. They said, here are the first five power-up urns to make Kratos really strong early in the game. And it actually was talking about that game. And so I got to do that like when it was happening. So a couple little things about this.
Doesn't this one start on the ship? It's like a...
It does. Yeah. So the plot of the game is that Kratos is... it's an alternate version of ancient Greece.
And I was right. Resident Evil 4 and Shadow of the Colossus were both 2005 as well. So that's a hell of a year. But
wow.
Because I remember playing those games and like not getting to God of War. I was aware of it.
That's unbelievable. But the idea is that Kratos is a warrior, and he has all of his fellow Spartans, and he's fighting a battle. They're going to lose that battle. And so rather than lose... He makes a deal with Ares to let him win, and then he would serve Ares. And then in order to make Kratos fully subservient and to not have anything holding him back and to be the best warrior he can be, which is kind of Kratos' wish when he says, I want to be as strong as I can be to beat back, you know, the people we're fighting, he basically tricks Kratos, he tricks his mind into killing his wife and child. Thereby turning his rage on, you know, to 11, and also taking away any earthly ties so that he can truly become this ultimate warrior.
Isn't it that like the ashes are like adhere to his body, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what gives him like the pale appearance.
Yep. He was once a successful but bloodthirsty captain in the Spartan army, led his men to several victories, but he was defeated by a barbarian king. This is from Wikipedia. When he was facing death, Kratos called on the god of war Ares, whom he promised to serve if the god would spare his men and provide the power to destroy their enemies. Ares agreed and bonded the Blades of Chaos, a pair of chain blades forged in the depths of Tartarus, to his new servant. So Kratos becomes his slave. Mm-hmm. Kratos, equipped with the blades, then was able to decapitate the barbarian king. So then Kratos had to go on and wage war at the behest of Ares, eventually leading an attack on a village occupied by worshippers of Athena. Unknown to Kratos, Ares had secretly transported Kratos' wife and daughter to the village. During his frenzied attack on its temple, Kratos accidentally killed them in a blind fury. Although Ares believed this act would free Kratos to become the perfect warrior, the horrified and saddened Spartan instead renounced his pledge of servitude to the god and swore vengeance upon him. And that is right there, like that triggers the whole journey.
Mm-hmm.
And so essentially from that point onward, he's plagued by these horrible nightmares. The oracle of the destroyed village cursed Kratos by bonding the ashes of his dead family to his skin. So he gets like white.
Mm-hmm. And that's why he becomes the ghost of Sparta, right?
Exactly. And so he's plagued by nightmares of his horrible deed, and he's vowed to serve the other gods in hopes of ridding himself of the vision. So as you go through these various games, you know, he obviously, in the first game, his goal is to get rid of Ares, to kill Ares for what he's done to him, which is, you know, pretty horrible. And then Zeus becomes the antagonist of the next two games. He goes against the Furies in Ascension, and then, you know, there's a couple other antagonists in other games. But other things about God of War, it is the 14th best-selling PlayStation game of all time.
Hmm.
So that's kind of a...
PlayStation 2, you mean.
PlayStation right? 2, yeah. Excuse me. 14th best-selling PlayStation 2 of all time. Sold more than 4.6 million copies worldwide. It's often regarded by many as one of the best action-adventure games for the platform. It won a lot of Game of the Year awards, and other people have just praised it for its graphics, sound, story, gameplay, and a lot of people say it's one of the greatest video games ever made. It's certainly one of the most unique and interesting games ever made. I mean, just the blueprint of what was put forth in the original God of War, you really see how brilliant it was when you see what God of War 2018 has done to evolve that formula, and then you remember that all of those things, except for obviously the perspective from which you fight, has been modernized, and now it's, you know, third person over the shoulder, but it's still going through levels that are very puzzle oriented. It's still about combat with big bold weapons and killing mythological creatures. It's still about
some platforming elements.
There's a little less of that now, I would say, but there's more just puzzle and stuff now. But I guess there's sort of platforming, but not real-time platforming, more like interactive.
Yeah. And it was kind of like that too. I mean, you would climb walls and like jump and like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. There were some parts though where
there were
actually,
some parts where you had to real time jump, like a double jump.
That part they got rid of. And that's fine that they got rid of it because that was never the best part of those games. And then you would get to these massive bosses after you fight. So you would fight with your weapons. Another thing about this game, before the bosses, another thing about this game to mention is it was a combo heavy game. So it's a lot like, I guess some of the inspirations would be like Devil May Cry.
For sure. I mean, even down to the red orbs, right? I mean,
right, right.
Yeah, so, Devil May Cry, and I guess that's primarily like some of the Capcom games like that, yeah.
And just being like an action-adventure title, and essentially this just took it and it made it more gruesome, more bloody, more brutal, and also more cinematic than any of those games had ever been before. It was just a completely novel idea. And it was really designed, because Jaffe's all about this. If you watch him now and he talks about game design, he just lives to never have game players get bored. He's kind of like ADD himself, and he's like, the worst thing that can happen is it can lull and you can lose your player. And so that was the idea, was that it was just constantly coming at you with, you know, the graphics, the sound, and the violence.
Which, in my opinion, is maybe part of like where its detriment is, like, in my view, like, it doesn't ever like give maybe like almost like a sophomoric, like it's afraid to be like something more than just the surface and like have time to breathe, have time to like get to know characters, right? Like so yeah, I mean that's interesting that he said it that way, and I can really see that, which would probably be a positive for like a lot of people, but is like somewhat of a negative to me and maybe you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, I think the more leisurely pace, the more, you know, only in retrospect, only as we look at God of War 2018 and Ragnarok, and we see that it has the ultra violence and the intensity punctuated by softer, quieter moments. And obviously, again, like we mentioned many times when we talk about this, Kratos is a war machine. He's angry. He doesn't take like time for like
he's
the finer
things.
He's
never sympathetic at all.
Right. Right. All he does is just go on, you know, I'm going to keep saying 11 out of 10, but that's what it is. It's like everything has been cranked up. The colors are 11.
Every line
the
is
blood
like
is 11. Yes. He doesn't talk. He just yells. Like everything is at 11. The volume and everything. Anyway, so that's kind of how the series started. It was a massive hit. And immediately it was clear that they were going to come out with a sequel to it. You know, by the end of God of War, the original, you are successful in killing Ares. And you become the new God of War. Yep. And then that brings on God of War 2. God of War 2 has also been...
Yeah, hit me with the setup of God of War 2, because I'm a little hazy on like what happens next.
Sure, sure.
Like,
it's good.
What is like propelling him to keep going? Because I remember, yes, he becomes the God of War, obviously.
Great question. So let me tell you. Let's see. Several locations are explored, including a real-world setting in the ancient city of Rhodes, several fictional locations, a brief scene in the underworld lair of Typhon, etc. I'm trying to get to... Okay, here we go. Kratos, the new god of war following Ares' death, is still haunted by nightmares of his past and is shunned by the other gods for his destructive ways. So he's just going on a rage spree. Ignoring Athena's warnings, Kratos joins the Spartan army in an attack on Rhodes, during which a giant eagle, which Kratos assumes to be Athena, suddenly drains a huge portion of his powers and uses it to animate the Colossus of Rhodes.
I remember that fight, right? Yep. That's the beginning of the game.
And it's just huge, right? Yeah. It's just so massive. This big Colossus of Rhodes is chasing you through the streets. It's really epic. Really epic. While battling the statue, Zeus offers Kratos the Blades of Olympus, the Blade of Olympus, a mighty sword that Zeus had used to end the Great War, requiring Kratos to infuse the blade with the remainder of his godly power.
Oh, yeah.
That doesn't sound like a trick, right? Although mortal once again, Kratos defeats the Colossus, but is mortally wounded. The eagle reveals itself to have been Zeus all along, who states he was forced to intervene as Athena refused to do so. Zeus then grants Kratos a final opportunity to be loyal to the gods, but Kratos refuses. Enraged, because that's Kratos, right? He's just like, fuck you!
Yeah.
About everything. Enraged by his defiance, Zeus kills him with the blade.
I remember that's when he stabs him, gives him... Yeah.
And you see the sword glows. He destroys the Spartan army. So the Spartan army is destroyed. Kratos is slowly dragged to the underworld, but is saved by Titan Gaia. Remember, it's like a big Earth-like creature with a face.
So she intervenes because obviously the Titans have a bone to pick with Olympus, right?
Exactly.
Because they're the ones who were overthrown by the Olympians.
Exactly. Gaia tells Kratos that she once raised the young Zeus, who eventually betrayed the Titans as vengeance for their cruelty as vengeance for the cruelty inflicted on his siblings by Zeus's father, Cronos. She instructs Kratos to find the Sisters of Fate. So now this becomes a time travel narrative, who can alter time, prevent his death, and allow him his revenge on Zeus. With the aid of Pegasus, Kratos finds the lair of Gaia's brother, Typhon. Anyway, it goes on. By the end...
But obviously that's what sparks him to specifically want to kill Zeus, right? Like,
yeah, because of what he gets there. Tricked and effed over, and he gets his power stolen.
And I remember Zeus is saying, like, you've already killed... It was because, like, you already killed one god. Like, you think there's a consequence to that. Like,
exactly. He eventually gets to the... key defeating Zeus helps Kratos to reach the Palace of the Fates. After evading traps and defeating more enemies, Kratos encounters an unseen foe, revealed to be a loyal Spartan soldier in search of the sisters. Before he dies, the soldier informs Kratos that Zeus has destroyed Sparta in Kratos' absence. So now his hometown has been destroyed, so there's another reason he's pissed.
Yeah.
Outraged, Kratos defeats the Kraken, frees a phoenix, riding the creature to the sisters' stronghold, where he confronts two of the sisters, Lachesis and Atropo. After they refuse his request to alter time, Kratos battles them. During this, the sisters try to change the outcome of Kratos' battle with Ares, but Kratos kills them both, then confronts the remaining sister, Clotho. He kills her using her own traps and acquires the Loom of Fate in order to return to the point at which Zeus betrayed him. So now he can reverse it. Kratos surprises Zeus, seizes the Blade of Olympus, and finally incapacitates him. Athena intervenes, though. This is what I meant when I said Athena's not always an ally.
But... yeah, go ahead. I know what happens next, right?
Athena intervenes and implores Kratos to stop, as by killing Zeus, he will destroy Olympus. Kratos ignores her and tries to kill Zeus, but Athena sacrifices herself by impaling herself upon the blade, granting Zeus's escape.
And I remember, like, Kratos, like, regret, like, he's like, why? Like, you know, like, he regrets, like, so, I mean, yeah, you're right. Like, I mean, she is his ally, but, like, her reasoning for intervening is because she knows that it's going to, like, destroy the balance and order of things. Like, that's her motivation for intervening.
Right. And why she was an ally, too, was to help him balance things, right? Yeah.
And he regrets killing Athena, obviously.
Before she dies, Athena reveals that Kratos is actually Zeus's son.
Mm-hmm. He's a demigod, right? Like,
Zeus was afraid Kratos would usurp him, just as Zeus has usurped his own father. Because what you fear is what you know you've done yourself, right? You know, liars are always looking for other liars in life, right? It's like, I know people lie because I lie, you know, and they're always, you know, that same kind of thing. He did this to his dad. Why wouldn't my son do it to me, right? Let's see here. Zeus was afraid Kratos would usurp him, just as Zeus usurped his own father, Cronos. Kratos declares that the rule of the gods is at an end, then travels back in time and rescues the Titans just before their defeat in the Great War. He returns with the Titans to the present, and the gods watch as their former foes climb Mount Olympus. Mm-hmm. Kratos, standing on the back of Gaia, declares that he has brought the destruction of Olympus.
And I remember that's like exactly where 3 starts.
Dead on.
Yeah.
Dead on. And so that was the point at which God of War 2 ends. God of War 2 was bigger and better in every way. The whole idea of that game was that...
Because obviously, like, the first game has a very narrow focus, right? Like, whereas, like, the second game is where it sort of, like, opens up, like, all the possibilities, you know, which obviously culminates with 3, right? Like, all the gods that he can cross paths with and fight and encounter and all that.
Absolutely. So there were some flaws that people had said, like, in the original game. Like, one of the big ones people were always calling out was that the a lot of the biggest, best parts of the action were quick time events. So this game tried to make that not the case anymore, to give you direct control over a lot of the stuff that you were doing. So that was one of the ways they tried to make it better. Making it better is always, with all these kind of games, whenever there's a directed camera, that you kind of, like, you move past a certain point, the camera angle switches. Sometimes that can be tough with, like, enemies coming behind you and things like that. So it's, it can be a challenge. Obviously this game faced a lot of threats from people, you know, like, about anti-violence and anti-sex and all of that. So that stuff continued on. And this game was definitely one that, helped, I don't know, people that were anti-video game have a case. Like, look at God of War, it's so horrible. Anyway, so that's it for the first 2 games. That was the PS2 era of God of War. And then there's some other things that happen, right?
Yeah.
So what is God of War Betrayal on mobile?
So this is something I just discovered upon researching and filling this out. So God of War Betrayal was a JavaScript mobile game.
What?
If you take a look at it, so it was like on flip phones. If you Google it, like, it looks pretty decent, actually. I mean, for what it is. I mean, it was for Nokia phones, I guess.
I think I might have played this, dude. I'm starting to have memories, man. But, I think I might have played. It's a side scroller, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it looks cool.
I did play this.
I didn't even know like phone games like this existed.
Yeah, they did.
Then,
there was like the N-Gage and shit. Yeah. I remember this. Yeah, it was just very basic, and you would just go left to right and do stuff. It is pretty cool. As I look at these graphics, you know,
it almost looks like Prince of Persia-esque, you know, like the graphics.
One of the things that's interesting about Kratos, like much like Mario, right? Like Mario was Jumpman, and then he became Mario. And the reason he was designed is because of like the limited sprites, right? And like they designed him in his hat so that you could detect what he was even when he had such a small number of sprite pixels available. Kratos, too, like... The design of the character, like being white skinned, what I mean is not like white people skin, but like pale white skinned, like powder white, and then have the red, like
the red swirl. I guess that's his tattoo, right?
Like, yeah, he's very striking and very like visually identifiable, even on this mobile game. So as I look at this mobile game, I'm like, wow, like that character really like you
pops.
Yeah, it comes off the screen. Like it's just a really well designed character, and it's certainly. You know, has proven itself to be just a wonderful character design. And now that the character's been imbued with like fatherhood and all this stuff that we now know him to be, I look back at these things and I'm just like, man, what a great character design that was. What a great palette for the rest of this to be built on top of, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway.
All right. So that, I mean, it sounds like you have vague memories
vague
that you potentially played it.
Yes.
I definitely never played it. But obviously it's just a side thing. So the next big release that we got was a prequel called God of War Chains of Olympus on the PlayStation Portable in 2008. And that was developed not by Sony Santa Monica, but by Ready at Dawn, who was the company that would make several like PSP games for like mainline Sony properties. Like, for example, they did the Daxter PSP game. You know, like from Jak and Daxter, and they would obviously go on to make The Order 1886, remember? So
absolutely.
You know, they were a company that, you know, heavily associated, not owned by PlayStation, but heavily associated with them. So they did this God of War spinoff game, as well as the sequel to this one. So I have not played either of the PSP games, but you have. So
I have,
Hit me with the Chains of Olympus and what that was like, and
it was great. So like, you know, we had PSPs, and the whole idea of a PSP and the Vita later was very different from what like a Game Boy or even a Game Gear was. The idea was console experiences on a handheld, and you know, history has shown us that that's, while a lot of people like that idea, it's probably not like that well advised.
Right, because it's not really how you want to be playing a game like that.
Yeah, yeah.
More,
so
more bite-sized experiences.
The best sort of take on that has been the Switch, for the reason that, you know, essentially it's handheld, but it's got a big enough screen that, you know, it's portable. You know what I'm saying? Like,
it's both. It's a Switch.
It is both.
Switches between them.
It is both. But
I think that's where they came up with the name.
But I just mean that it. When it's portable, it's still like much bigger than any portable ever was before,
right,
in terms of screen real estate.
Sure.
So it's almost like a lot of people I know play it like sitting next to their spouse while a movie's on or whatever. You know what I mean? So it's like a home system that's handheld for a lot of people.
Yeah, I honestly never play it handheld, to be
me
honest.
Me neither. Me neither. Really, but don't. We're weird, dude. We're weird. Most people do.
I know. Yeah, I'm just saying me, and sounds like you. But yeah,
yeah. Exactly. Anyway, so PSP, one of the absolute killer apps, or the killer apps, were these two games, were two of them. There were others that were really good, like Daxter, and there's a ton of good ones. Final Fantasy VII, Crisis Core, and just so much good stuff. But this was one of the most beloved games, universally acclaimed by critics, became the highest rated PSP title on Metacritic and game rankings, especially the graphics were praised. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, the game has sold more than 3.2 million copies worldwide, making it the seventh best-selling PSP PlayStation Portable game of all time.
Did we get where God of War 2 landed, like, in terms of sales for PS2?
I didn't see that.
I can maybe find that. Because I bet, I'm assuming it probably took over God of War 1.
Oh, definitely. Because God of War 1 was only 14th, remember?
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that...
Well, God of War... okay, keep going. I was reading the wrong thing.
Yeah, no problem. This game was also eventually... So it was obviously originally released in March 4th, 2008. So they didn't waste much time. This game must have been in development like immediately after God of War was so well received. Took about, I guess, 3 years of development. That's just my guess.
So, just to close it out, God of War 2 sold 4.24 million copies worldwide, making it the 16th best-selling PS2. So it actually was slightly less.
That's surprising.
Yeah.
That's really surprising. Anyway, so, we'll have to see how the PS3 game did. And just in terms of millions, gaming has just become much more prevalent, though, and all the numbers are infinitely bigger now. But still, that I'm very surprised at that. That's rare that happens.
Do you know, can you guess what the number one best-selling game on PS2 was?
Yes. Grand Theft Auto 3. San Andreas.
Yeah, Grand Theft Auto 3 was 6. San Andreas is number 1.
Yeah, that's right. As soon as I said it, I was like, no.
Vice City number 4.
Damn those games, dude. Mm-hmm.
Those are huge. I mean,
so big.
I mean, you can't understate that.
So big. So the gameplay is similar to the previous installments, focus on combo-based combat, achieved through the player's main weapon, the Blades of Chaos, and secondary weapons acquired throughout the game. Features quick-time events, as they all do, and the player can use up to 3 magical attacks as alternative combat options, and it also has puzzles and platforming. So, you know, similar type thing to what you've seen before. It's set in an alternate version of ancient Greece, and here we go. During Kratos' 10 years of service to the Olympian gods, he's sent to the city of Attica to help defend it from the invading Persian army. After successfully killing the Persian king, decimating his army, and slaying their pet basilisk, Kratos observes the sun fall from the sky, plunging the world into darkness. As he fights his way through the city of Marathon, the Spartan witnesses the black fog of the Olympian Morpheus cover the land. I don't remember this story at all as I read this. Finding the Temple of Helios, he learns from Athena that Morpheus has caused many of the gods to fall into a deep slumber due to the absence of light. This is BS, man. Like, this story just is so unconnected. As I hear this, I'm just like, man.
Is this the one that had to do with his brother or something? I know like one of these has to do with his brother or like the quest of finding his brother or something like that.
Yeah, it's possible. Zeus is let's see. After locating, sacrifices his weapon daughter, but discovers that Persephone is embittered by Zeus's betrayal. I don't know, man. This just sounds like...
It's set between the events of God of War and Betrayal, the mobile game, by the way. So it's slightly after God... I said prequel, so it's a prequel to 2, I guess.
Really? No, I don't... Wait a minute. Are you sure?
I'm looking at on Wikipedia. It says...
It says it's the second...
With the exception of flashbacks, the events are set between games God of War and Betrayal. Which makes sense, because he has the blades, right?
That's true.
At this point.
That's true. Okay, so he's doing stuff for Athena, basically. With the power of the sun and the aid of the Titan Atlas, Morpheus and the Queen of the Underworld, Persephone...
Lawrence Fishburne's in this?
He's probably... Oh, yeah. You got me. All right. Intend to destroy the Pillar of the World and in turn Olympus. So he's got to step up. Anyway, it's a good game. It really is. When I played it, I was like, this feels like God of War. When you first turn on the screen on the PSP and you start seeing his blade swing around, it's really a sight. Because you know how when he starts swinging those blades, they're just all over the screen? Mm-hmm. It really just looks beautiful. It's just
especially with those like high-level combos. You know,
yes, when it really lights up. And that's another thing that's so great about these games, just visually how it sells what's going on so well. Okay, so that brings us now to 2009 and the God of War Collection. Mm-hmm. So this is when we get PS3 now. We get God of War 1 and 2, and then apparently, I didn't remember this, but later, the God of War Collection with 1 and 2 was later on Vita as well, which makes me now kind of want to play that.
On Vita?
Yeah, I have a Vita.
But why not PS3?
It's a good point. It's a good point. I'm going to do it at home anyway, right?
Yeah, so in 2014, it was ported to Vita. So this is like the lead up to, like, we know God of War 3 is coming, so this is like... You know, putting everything on PS3
so people can do
anticipation of it.
So this whole thing we talk about these days about like, you know, making The Last of Us Part 1 and all that kind of stuff accessible on a new console and made for the new console, it's not unheard of.
No.
You know, this has been going on since time immemorial, right? Okay, so this brings us now to God of War 3. So as we said, David Jaffe directed God of War 1. Corey Barlog and David Jaffe worked together, but Corey Barlog was the main director on God of War 2. And then God of War 3 was given to another person. Now, by the way, in all of these cases, the people that directed these three games, all of them worked on all of the games in different capacities. So, like, Corey Barlog was like an animator or something on the first one.
Yeah, I think this guy who you're about to name, he was like the art director on like some of the previous games, right?
Yeah, Stig Asmussen. And he is he made a great game. God of War 3, a lot of people say it's their favorite. And it really benefited from going to the new PS3 console because, you know, these games were just getting really big and bold and brash, and they really wanted to go to the next level. But they were held back by the console. And so in many ways, it really was time for a new console generation to take it to the next level. And this game just took everything and made it bigger and bolder. And really, this is the game where the set pieces just became insane. You'd be oohing and aahing at some of the stuff you saw in this game. Because PS3 is really when graphics started getting gorgeous, in my opinion, where I'm just like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm seeing this.
Yeah. You know,
PS2, it was always pretty, but I was always like, yeah, it's a video game. It's a little prettier, but it always had jaggies and all that. PS3 is when it started to smooth out and really start looking pretty, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And like we said, like it literally takes place with Kratos on the back of a Titan climbing Mount Olympus. Like that is like literally the first moment of the game, like right where God of War 2 left off, but now in like high definition, like, you know?
Yep. So here is the high level premise. Reigniting the Great War, Kratos ascends Mount Olympus until he is abandoned by the Titan Gaia. So obviously they were working with him strictly to overthrow Zeus, not because of any reason they care about him, right? Guided by Athena's spirit, Kratos battles monsters, gods, and titans in a search for Pandora, without whom he cannot open Pandora's box, defeat Zeus, and end the reign of the Olympian gods and have his revenge. So let me go down. I guess let's look. Okay, so first of all, accolades. It was critically acclaimed upon release. Praise for the graphics, gameplay, and scope. Some people liked the plot, some didn't. Received several awards, like Most Anticipated Game, Best PS3 Game, at the back then, the Spike Video Game Awards. This is the early days of what Keighley was building. Artistic Achievement Award at the British Academy of Film and Television Arts. It's the second best-selling game in the God of War series, and the ninth best PS3 game of all time. It sold nearly 5.2 million copies.
I see it as it is the eighth on Wikipedia here.
Well, let's
5.2 million, number eight. So, I mean,
well, anyway,
right around there.
Yeah, right around there. It also, another thing to note, as you look at like numbers of games sold, games became much more prolific just in the culture. Mm-hmm. So like the game, if you want to look at like Call of Duty numbers now, it would just be it's tens of millions.
Yeah. But to be fair about this too, it is an exclusive in an era where the console wars were in full effect. This was like a very tight console generation, right? I mean, the Xbox 360 and PS3 sold nearly identical amounts, and obviously it's an exclusive, so it's never going to reach the level of like a Call of Duty or something like that, obviously. But yeah.
So it had sold all those copies by June of 2012. And was included in the God of War Saga, which was released for PlayStation 3 on August 28th, 2012. Since its release, it's been named as one of the greatest games of all time. In celebration of its 10th anniversary, a remastered version of the game titled God of War 3 Remastered was brought out for PS4 on July 14th, 2015. And then eventually, obviously, it led to the new God of War that we know nowadays. I don't think I talked about the specific release date. So the game was released in, 2010? Mm-hmm. So right after the God of War collection, like you said, got everybody primed for it. And then let's look at the, let's see here. So some, there's some new mechanics in this one. Magical abilities in this game were learned with the acquisition of a new weapon. So it gave each weapon its own magic attack. So, like, for example, the army of Sparta could only be used with the Blaze of Exile. Magic gives Kratos a variety of ways to attack and kill enemies. So, like, the Claws of Hades soul summon ability, mm-hmm. which conjures souls to attack enemies. There's the Nemean Cestus. I love the Cestus. Right? Yeah. They're fists. The Nemean Roar and the Nemesis Whip's Nemesis Rage. In addition to the four primary weapons, there were three secondary ones known as items. They're the Bow of Apollo, the Head of Helios. Man, this is another thing I remember about loving these games. When you get these secondary weapons, imagine, remember getting the bow and how
you could shoot really, really rapidly.
It made me... Getting those kind of weapons and all you could do with it reminded me a lot of Zelda. There's a lot of Zelda in these games, I realize. There really is. Like, you're getting new items and then, like, these essentially puzzle dungeons.
Yeah, like maybe there were certain barriers that you could break down with the Nemean fists and stuff like that, right? Like,
you also still have Poseidon's Trident, the Golden Fleece, and Icarus's Wings that you got in previous games, and you can use them to overcome obstacles. Also, Hades' soul allows him to swim in the River Styx, because you do end up down there at one point in the game. Also, there's a new combat grapple, a ranged grab move, which, depending on the weapon, can pull Kratos towards foes, which I love that. A simple grab allowing him to use a weak foe as a battering ram. That's fun. Let's see here. Setting. So let's just talk about the plot real quick. Kratos and Gaia lead the Titans into climbing up Olympus to destroy the Olympian gods directly at the end of 2. Kratos killing Poseidon when he attempts to stop the Titans' ascent on Mount Olympus with the god's death, causing the oceans to flood Greece. Kratos and Gaia reach Olympus's peak, only to be knocked off the mountain by Zeus when Kratos tries to attack him. As Gaia clings to the mountainside, she refuses to save Kratos, calling him a pawn for the Titans' revenge. Wow.
And then I remember that then he starts, like, fighting a Titan, right? Like, that's climbing, and he's, like, attacking his fingers, and, like...
He falls into the River Styx.
Okay.
And that was a great scene. That was a great scene, though, when he falls, and you literally... It's, like, right at the moment when he's grasping victory, he falls to the lowest point in the entire series.
Right.
Where he's gonna die. He's in the River Styx, you know, gonna die. And then this is where they do their Metroiding in this game. So remember, in God of War 2, they did the thing where, like, Zeus was like, put all your power in this sword, bro, and then he destroys the sword or whatever. In this one, it's like, we're gonna put him in the River of Styx, and when he's in there, the souls consume his power. Mm-hmm. And so that's, like, the conceit for why he has to be repowered up in the game.
Weaken
him, and they ruin the blades of Athena. Climbing from the river, he's greeted by Athena's spirit, who ascended to a higher existence after sacrificing herself to save Zeus from Kratos, and had witnessed truths which she previously could not. She gives Kratos the blades of exile and tells him he must extinguish the flame of Olympus to kill Zeus. So I guess now that she has this new truth, she realizes Zeus really must die.
Yep, she's like, you have to go to Norse mythology.
Yeah.
You're going to have a son.
Yeah. After finding the three judges of the underworld and the chain of balance, I remember that balance was cool, Kratos briefly meets the spirit of Pandora, whom he originally mistook for his dead daughter, Calliope. Following an encounter with the Olympian blacksmith Hephaestus, and recovering the blade of Olympus, he kills Hades and releases the souls of the underworld.
That's where he gets the new weapons, right? Those little claw things.
Kratos considers searching for Calliope's soul, but Athena reminds him of his quest, and he leaves the underworld. Kratos reaches Olympia and finds the wounded Gaia pleading for help, only for Kratos to sever her arm as payback for earlier betrayal while watching her fall to her apparent death. Mm-hmm. Kratos continues his ascent, murdering powerful foes such as the Titan Perseus. That's what you were talking about. Mm-hmm. And the god Helios, plunging Greece into eternity.
I remember the Helios part where he, like, literally, like, rips his head off, and you're seeing, and the camera, like, zooms in on his, like, neck and, like, all the tissues, viscera, and everything, like, snapping away. I mean, it's pretty brutal.
Yeah, it is.
And then once he kills Helios, right, the sun is just gone, right? Like, it's like a full eclipse now, because he's the god of the sun.
Yep, it plunges Greece into eternal darkness in the process. He also pursues overconfident Hermes to the Chamber of the Flame.
I remember he steals his boots. He, like, chops his legs off.
Wow. Finds Pandora's box is held within the flames of Olympus, which Athena says can only be quelled by Pandora herself. Kratos manages to catch Hermes and kill him, releasing a plague upon Greece.
Right.
At the forum, he has an audience with the drunken Hera, who ignores his request for Pandora's location and summons Hercules. Yeah. Wow, you do remember this. After discussing his jealousy of his half-brother, Hercules attacks Kratos. but is killed. Kratos then encounters Aphrodite. So there we go, the brother thing.
Yeah, and I remember, yeah, because he's a half-brother of Zeus, right? But, like, because they're both half-sons of Zeus or sons of Zeus, right? So they're half-brothers. But I remember that's another brutal part where he takes the Nemean fist, right? And he's just, like, pounding Hercules uh-huh. and just, like, beating his face to, like, a
that's
pulp.
Right. I do remember that. There's a they you got to hand it to them. Just think about how indemnable – no, what's the right word? How much indelible these images are. They oh, went right, into your sure. head and they just
yeah.
like
they like stick there, yeah.
Yeah. It's really, really well done visually. Releasing at the forum he has an audience with the oh no, I already said that. Kratos then encounters Aphrodite, who was indifferent to his war on Olympus. She leads him back to her estranged husband, Hephaestus, through Hyperion's gate. The blacksmith, learning of Kratos' plan to quell the flame of Olympus, sends him to Tartarus to retrieve the Omphalos stone, claiming he will forge a new weapon for the Spartan. Kratos faces Kronos, kills the Titan for the stone, and returns to Hephaestus. After forging the weapon, the god tries to kill Kratos himself and is fatally wounded by the Spartan. Mm-hmm. Before dying, Hephaestus admits that he was trying to protect his daughter Pandora, who was imprisoned in the labyrinth. I remember that labyrinth really fucking well. After Kratos opened her box and pleads with Kratos to spare her. Reusing the Hyperion gate, Kratos travels through Hera's gardens where he kills Hera for disrespecting Pandora, ending all Greek plant life.
Right, because she's the goddess of like the harvest and all that, right?
Before making his way to the labyrinth. The imprisoned, there's a lot here, but this is important because this kind of ends the saga. The imprisoned architect Daedalus, distraught to learn of his son's death, dies as Kratos proceeds.
Icarus is his father.
Proceeds to unite the labyrinth and venture through the aerial puzzle to rescue Pandora. Neutralizing the judges and breaking the chain of balance, Kratos raises the labyrinth and Pandora tries to enter the flame. Zeus intervenes. God, this game has so much plot. And fights Kratos, but Pandora sacrifices herself despite Kratos' reluctance. Finding Pandora's box empty, Kratos attacks Zeus before the Gaia joins the frays and attempts to kill them both. But they escape through an open wound on her body and continue their battle inside her chest.
Yeah, and then I remember he like stabs Zeus into her heart. So he gets like a twofer.
Wow. Double kill. Yeah. Kratos impales Zeus against Gaia's heart, killing her and apparently Zeus. Believing he is done, Kratos is attacked by Zeus's spirit, Jesus, mm-hmm. who removes his weapons and powers. Before Zeus can fully finish him off, Kratos is saved by a vision of Pandora during a journey into his psyche. With help from the spirits of Calliope and his wife Lysandra, this is a nice full circle moment, mm-hmm. Kratos forgives himself before regaining consciousness. So in a way, it reframes the whole struggle as his own inner battle with himself ever since his family was murdered, right?
Right.
And all this stuff on the outside sort of mirrors his own inner battle. Kratos forgives himself before regaining consciousness, also regaining his god powers along with the power of hope.
Not love, no.
No. It's love. He forces Zeus's spirit back into his body and then beats him to death, mm-hmm. releasing a column of lightning into the sky and plunging Greece into complete chaos. As Athena reappears, demanding that Kratos return what she thinks he took from Pandora's box. When Kratos tells her it was empty, she refuses to believe this, explaining that when Zeus sealed the evils of the world in the box, she placed the power of hope in it as well. Foreseeing that it would eventually be opened, Athena realizes that when Kratos opened the box to defeat Ares, the evils escaped and slowly corrupted the gods, while Kratos was imbued with hope, which had been hidden by his guilt. She demands Kratos return her power with the intention of establishing her own rule over Greece, but Kratos refuses and seemingly kills himself with the blade of Olympus so that hope can be dispersed among mankind.
Whoa.
So finally he's a good dude.
There we go.
A disappointed Athena, this is what I mean by Athena's not always an ally. A disappointed Athena leaves empty-handed while Kratos collapses on a mural of Phoenix.
It is his half-sister, though.
Right. So Athena leaves empty-handed. Kratos collapses on a mural of a phoenix. Because he's going to rise like one. In a post-credits scene, a trail of blood is seen leading away from the abandoned Blade of Olympus, implying Kratos' survival, but leaving his whereabouts unknown, right? So now,
so do we like know what happens to Greece, like what happens to the realm of Greece or wherever, you know, since that's its like own sort of like pocket realm, like in the, like what happens there? Like, it's just completely like destroyed or.
By the way, oh, sorry, real quick. I want to just say, actually, Corey Barlog worked on this game as the director for the first 8 months, and then he left for other opportunities, and Stig Asmussen took over.
Okay.
So that's important to mention. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying, like, do we know, like, what happened to Greece, like, the realm of Greece?
I don't think so.
Is it just completely destroyed?
It seems like it went into chaos, because, like, you're right, because in that whole, it's like, there's darkness, then there's no plants.
Then there's a plague.
And... Right, and then there's chaos, so I don't know, man. I guess it doesn't matter, because Kratos is gone. I mean,
yeah. And, like, how does he leave? Like, what does that mean?
We,
like,
don't know.
How are they disconnected? And, yeah, like, I guess
that was never explained. And that's fine. I mean, you know, I kind of wonder, though. I do kind of wonder. So, anyway. So, that's God of War 3. And that, a lot of people say it's their favorite. And I loved it when I played it.
Yeah.
And then it's obviously been remastered for PS4. So, if you want to check it out, there's a pretty new version to play of it. So, then that takes us in 2010. Man, there's so many of these games so fast. God of War Ghost of Sparta on PSP. That was done by Ready at Dawn.
Again, yep.
And this one is...
this is the one about his brother, maybe.
I bet you it is. Let me just look. We'll do this plot kind of quickly because it's not as important.
I think I was reading this one when I said it was the one that took place between... this is the one that took place between God of War and Betrayal.
Yeah, that was so Chains of Olympus really is a prequel.
Where does Chains of Olympus take place?
Right at it's the second game chronologically, so after Ascension, before God of War.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I knew something wasn't right there. Okay.
My bad.
No worries, man. You fixed it. So in this one, Kratos locates his mother, Callisto, attempts to reveal the identity of his father. Callisto turns into a beast. Seeking clues about his brother, Deimos, mm-hmm. Kratos decides to reach his hometown, Sparta. While traveling through the Aronian Pass, Kratos meets the goddess Erinys. This one's not really important enough to talk about. It's really a side story.
But you played it in real time?
Oh, yeah. I played it in real time. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed it a lot. It was great. It was just another fun God of War adventure. They all blended together for me. God of War 1 was like, when I played that one, it was really special because I played it at the time and I was like, this is very different. It was very hard. Like, these games were not easy games. These didn't fit. Maybe now they would be, but at the time, like, they were hard, demanding fucking games. And then there were some people that loved playing them, like, on the hardest difficulty.
Like, on the God of War difficulty.
Yeah, that's so arrogant. Give me God of War. Right? Yeah. Anyway. So it's got over 25% more gameplay than its PSP predecessor.
25% gameplay? Wow.
More, dude. More. It actually took 23 months to complete. Greater number of enemies on screen, more boss encounters. The director of Chains of Olympus, Rue Wirasuriya, did not return to direct. So Dana Jan, the lead level designer of Chains of Olympus, was a director. The goal was to make the game bigger than Chains of Olympus, which had pushed the PSP to its functional limits. Ghost of Sparta had taken the PSP to its absolute capacity, with one additional feature being more on-screen foe. So they really pushed that shit as far as they could.
19th best-selling PSP game at 1.2 million. And then nice. Chains of Olympus, by contrast, was the 7th best at 3.2 million. So obviously, this was like a very late PSP game, obviously, too, which is part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. It looks like there was a demo at one point. PlayStation Network, released in North America. It was released November 2nd, 2010 in North America. And then it also was released as part of the God of War Origins Collection.
Yeah, so we have that here, coming up here.
Yeah, so that's next.
So they released God of War Origins Collection for PS3 in 2011. That was the remastered collection of the two PSP games. And then the next year in 2012, the God of War Saga was released, as you mentioned before, which is the remaster collection of God of War 1, 2, and then it also included God of War 3 on, you know, all in one package, along with digital codes for the PSP games.
Right.
So they weren't on the disc, but, you know, there was that Orange Origins collection on the disc. Then after that, we got the last one
on the
PS3 and as part of the first era. And that is God of War Ascension. Now, this is a weird one to me because it's 2013. I remember this pretty vividly because this game came out and Gears of War Judgment came out like around the same time. Do you remember that? It was like a prequel story to Gears of War.
Yes, I remember that.
They're both GOW. They both got like these little spin-off-y kind of games, and they were both like during the time where
That was when those two side characters were up against a tribunal. I remember that game.
Yeah, it's Cole and Baird, their story. Both series were kind of like on a parallel path where like they were both kind of like at the point where they were kind of wearing on us, you know, like they were kind of losing steam as franchises, I felt. And it was just funny how they came around the same time. They're both GOW, you know, they both had these like spin-off
and we were sick of both of them.
And I think most people were kind of like over it at this point, you know, because like you're talking about like the step down from like Gears of War 3 to Judgment and then God of War 3 to Ascension, and it's pretty big, you know what I mean, like in terms of like level of hype and spectacle and all that. But this is like a prequel to the entire series, directed by Todd Pappy, 2013. It has to do with Kratos and like the Furies, right, and all that.
And a couple little interesting things about this: a lot of people were very nervous about it. First of all, it's the seventh installment, came out March 12, 2013 for PS3, kind of getting to the end of the PS3 era too.
Yeah.
And it was a prequel to the entire series, so a total prequel. That said, parts of it are a prequel, parts of it are at a different point.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a lot of these games, they sort of twist and turn, because the Furies, later on in the saga, the Furies have captured him, and so it's flashbacks between, like, how he was trying to get to the Furies, and then, like, being captured by the Furies.
Yeah, it's, like, framed around, like, the starting point of the game, right? Like, and then you play, like, the before and the after, I guess, right? You know what I mean?
Yep. Yep. He wants to free himself from the bond to Ares, basically. And so that's what he's trying to do in this one. The really weird controversial thing about it was when they announced it was supposed to have a lot of multiplayer elements.
Right.
And it did have a full multiplayer piece, which is weird. It also changed up the way that, like, weapons would work, where it uses... First of all, let me talk about QuickTime events. So it continues QuickTime events, but it also has a prompt list freeform system. I don't really understand. I played the game. I don't remember that part. It also has four magical attacks and a power enhancing ability can be used as alternative combat options. And the idea was that the system was redesigned for combat, so that like you couldn't. It didn't have like all these cool weapons you would get. It depend like you would switch like to like. Like lightning power and fire power and water power and like purple power and poison power, whatever. And like that would depend on what moves
turtle
you
power.
Had. Right, turtle power too. It would determine what moves you had, etc. Based on which one you... So it was like you switched to different modes. It received generally favorable reviews, even though at first everybody was like, F no, we don't want multiplayer.
But it was a pretty lukewarm compared to the rest of the series.
Definitely. Sure. It has modes for both competitive and cooperative play, and it's online-only multiplayer.
What was the online all about?
I don't really know. At all. To be honest, let me see here.
It's hard to imagine what that even is.
It's a third-player video game scenes, and the single-player or first-person camera. Let's see. Where's the multiplayer mode here? Because I don't remember what you did in the multiplayer, quite frankly. Let's see here. Here we go. It's the only one in the whole series to offer multiplayer. It's online only. Up to 8 players can take part. You enter a multiplayer battle. Each player is introduced to a warrior who, like Kratos, is an Oathbreaker and is imprisoned in the prison of the damned. The warrior's backstory is explored in Rise of the Warrior. Player takes control of the warrior and aligns with one of the four deities, Ares, Hades, Zeus, or Poseidon. The main objective is for players to take control of a map to earn rewards from the gods. God, this sounds lame. Each god offers a unique combat playstyle and in-battle abilities. The attack style of the god with whom the player aligns is critical to the warrior's path. Players who ally with Ares are brute force experts. Players who ally with Zeus are magical. Players who ally with Poseidon, sports focus on team synergy. Players who ally with Hades are versatile. So it's like class-based in that way. Players can create a total of 4 warriors to have a champion representing each god. They unlock special abilities, new and upgraded armor. So what do they do? What do you do?
Seems like you're kind of like, in this picture I'm looking at, like you're on a map and maybe like, yeah, like it looks like they're all fighting a boss or something. And yeah, I don't know.
It looks cool. I mean, it looks like shoehorned.
You just said it was lame.
No. It's shoehorned as shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And but it says right here, 5 multiplayer modes. Team Favor of the Gods, Match of Champions, Trail of the Gods, and Capture the Flag, Bout of Honor. So Bout of Honor is probably like Deathmatch or something.
Okay, so there's a non-team version of Match of Champions, 4-8-player Deathmatch with a similar goal of Team Favor of the Gods. Trial of the Gods is cooperative time trial in which the duo faces 5 waves of mythological monsters, concluding with a boss. That sounds awesome. Mm. I like that.
And it says Bout of Honor is one-on-one.
This sounds cool. I could dig it. By the way, like... do I want to play this long term? No, but I could see like a weekend of enjoying it, right?
Yeah, sure.
It'd be fun.
I mean, this is kind of what we talked about, the 360 era and PS3 era was like everything had to have a multiplayer component.
God, man.
You know, it was like that era, like where it didn't, no one really wanted to hear about it if it didn't have a multiplayer component. It was like that, you know, weird kind of point in time.
Yeah. Let's see here. Interesting. Interesting, man. Well, anyway.
And this is the last game to feature the original voice actor, Terrence C. Carson, as the voice of Kratos until Christopher Judge took over in 2018.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. So that's it for the sort of original series games that played like that, right? 'Cause that was, mm-hmm. And then after that, we move into the second era.
Yep.
So now this is where everybody listening to this is very familiar, probably, which is obviously God of War and God of War Ragnarok. However, let's first talk about this weird thing you found. So what is this?
So there is officially considered a game in the series called God of War, A Call from the Wilds, which is a text-based game that was played through Facebook Messenger. So... I guess it was kind of like a text adventure that you would interact with via Facebook Messenger, if you can believe it. So it was kind of like a prequel leading into, you know, the hype train for God of War 2018, also released in 2018. Did you even know this existed?
Never knew it existed.
Yeah.
At all.
I'm looking at like an image of it, and you can see it's like those text-based adventure game where like you get out of bed, you know, it gives you a little description. Do you want to go northwest, east, or south? And you would write, you know, south, and then it would tell you what is going on.
I kind of want to play it.
I don't think it exists anymore.
Well, I bet you somebody's like,
yeah, someone archived it somehow. Yeah.
Interesting.
You know, like think of like what are those game? What was that game like Zork or whatever? Like that classic. Text game.
Yep. Return to, I don't know, something.
Yeah, Zork.
Okay, so that takes us to 2018. So Corey Barlog has returned to Sony Santa Monica many years before this, I think 2012-ish. And
he went on a Vision Quest.
Yes, he went on a Vision Quest.
You have a story about him, apparently.
Okay, I'll share the story. So first of all, I was really... like really hardcore about video games, like we both were back in the day. So when God of War 2 came out, I was watching all like the extra features and stuff. So I was out in Los Angeles at the E4ALL Expo. This was the 1 year before E3 was ever open to the public. They made a separate expo for the public. It was called E4ALL. And so I went to this, and there was the E4ALL Expo, and then like that night there was a show. You remember that thing that Tommy Tallarico did? Where he went around and like did like game
like
music.
The music thing, yeah.
It was like and basically it was the worst show ever. And it was like basically I'm just being real. And it's basically him with like a wanker ass guitar, like doing like sick guitar riffs on stage while various music played, and it didn't sound good because it was in a studio. It was in a place that wasn't really made for like good acoustics. It was terrible. It really was. And I loved everything I was seeing, and yet I hated the show. It was bad. But anyway, before the show, I was eating. I was young at the time, so I'm eating with my mother. At a steak restaurant just right near the venue where this like Rock and Roll Live or Video Games Live, I think it was called, okay. was going to be held. And I look over at the next table.
Where is this again? Sorry.
Los Angeles.
Okay.
I look over at the next table and it's Corey Barlog with his glasses, his signature glasses, eating with his wife mm-hmm. at the table, right? And they're talking or whatever. So at a certain point, like I've always been this way. I was just like, I'm going to go talk to Corey Barlog.
While he's eating.
Yes. Well, actually, his wife had left for the bathroom, so it was a perfect opportunity. And I was going to go to the bathroom too. But first, nothing to do with his wife. But first, I stopped by the table. And I was like, dude, just wanted to say, man, I recognize you from, you know, watching some of these behind the scenes and really big fan of God of War. I thought you did awesome things with the next game, etc. He shook my hand. He said, that's really awesome, man. Thanks. So I go off to the bathroom. Only recently, she didn't want to hurt my feelings. Only recently, my mom revealed to me that while I was still at the bathroom, Corey Barlog's wife came back to the table. And Corey Barlog said, dude, a fan just came up to me and he actually recognized me. Like, that was not a thing for him back then. So I didn't know this part of the story.
What do you mean your mom didn't tell you? Why would that hurt your feelings?
I didn't think it would. But she just thought that maybe it would, like, hurt the experience. She's trying to, like, she thought it might hurt the experience for me to know that, like, he bragged about it to his girlfriend or whatever. Like, I might be hurt by that or something. And I was like, dude, that's awesome. That means it meant something to him. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's really cool. But anyway, it was just one of those weird little things. And finally, it's been revealed by my mom that that's what happened. You know how she said it before? She would always say, he said something to his wife to try to impress her when you left or whatever. And she'd never tell me what. Mm-hmm. And then it was that. And then I was like, oh my God, now the story finally makes fucking sense. But anyway, so that was my claim to fame, meeting Corey Barlog.
So this is before or after God of War?
God of War 2 was out.
Okay, so
this was 2008, man, or 2009.
Gotcha. Okay, so it was a while ago. Okay.
Oh yeah, this is a long ass. I told you I was with my mom at a steak place, dude. Okay. Like, this is a long ass time ago. And then at that point, that was really, you know, we didn't hear from Corey Barlog for a long time because he left during God of War 3. And then let me see if I can find. There's this thing. Where he talks about this vision quest that he went on. And it's really, let's see if I can find this George Miller thing. But it was basically, he talked about like the time when he was, here we go.
Well, that's cool. You made an impression. Cause I mean, you know, that is probably a thing that happens to most video game directors, developers, like, no, they're kind of like, faceless people, right? You know what I mean? Like, no one really knows them or appreciates them outside of like the very select few.
Exactly. Who transcend. Exactly. That, yeah. Exactly. Okay. So here's a little, this isn't the exact thing I wanted to read. One day, maybe I will, but here's what we say. When he left Sony in 2008, Corey Barlog spent a few years working with George Miller in order to ship a Mad Max game that eventually wasn't released. Celebrating Fury Road, in 2015, Avalanche Studios launched instead a proper Mad Max open world title. Talking to GameSpot, Barlog provided further details about that partnership and discussed the influence of that experience on his upcoming PlayStation 4 game, God of War. This is back before God of War came out. Quote, "It's just unfortunate the way that sometimes games go that they ended up going in a different direction, and George and I ended up not working on that one with them. But the learnings I got from that definitely made the new God of War possible. I think to do this," Barlog said of that Mad Max title that was never shipped, "I think if I had attempted this game, I'm not even certain if I would have attempted it had I not worked with George. That is the impact he has. I feel like prior to working with him, it would be like reading a book without your glasses, and that you have terrible vision, so you see the words, but they're blurry. Working with him and starting to understand why drama occurs, why conflict feeds into the development of all the characters, that kind of put glasses on me to help understand, like, wow, I really don't understand drama." Shit. See, this is what I mean by, like, some vision quest shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he went on this adventure, and it changed things for him.
But you can see that parallel with the metamorphosis that Kratos takes, right? Like, from, you know, the first series to the new game, right? Like, just that maturity, like the different way to view things.
Exactly.
Like, maybe like being a acolyte of Jaffe, right? Like, where it's like, no, the player can never be bored. Just got to be cranked up to 11, going nuts every, you know, like every, yep. There can't be just a lull moment. Like, you just have to be crazy, like, and edgy, like Twisted Metal and this and that. And then it's just like, no, like, sometimes the best moments are the quiet moments where nothing is being said, nothing is happening, right? Like, I'm sure he learned a lot, like, just influence and learned a lot from just The Last of Us too, because you could see a lot of that DNA in God of War 2018 as well.
Exactly. I just think, I'm just looking at all the different places where Corey Barlog is talking about stuff. There's a lot about Barlog, because now he's a superstar. You know, he's the kind of guy who, and this is really douchey, but he's the kind of guy that when he was winning all those awards for God of War 2018, he went up for like the fifth award.
The magic.
You know the story.
You said the story before.
Oh, okay. I hate that. Forget it.
But doesn't it make you think, like, what's his next game then? Because if he was doing something
3 days ago, as of right this minute, he teased a new game.
It teased it how? Like, what do you mean?
That's what it just said. Corey Barlog teases new game. Let me see if I can find it.
Because we know.
Here we go. Here we go.
He had already talked about it somewhat, right? Was it during the Game Awards or whatever? Like when the other guy was revealed to be the director and he was like saying, hey, like you'll hear about what I'm working on soon. Like, you know what I mean? Like, can't talk about it today.
Okay, now this just means that there will be another God of War game after Ragnarok. That's all he's saying.
Big shocker there.
Right, yeah. Whoa, really? The biggest fucking selling game? Anyway, all right. So let's get back to talking about God
of
War.
But I'm saying, doesn't that make you excited about like what is this next game that's going to be the Corey Barlog Presents, you know, game?
It gets me really excited. I hope it's something very different, like sci-fi or something, or like fantasy medieval.
I mean, Santa Monica is a big studio. There's a lot going. They have a lot of people, so.
Well, yeah, but they've always only worked on one thing, so it'll be interesting. Well, they've grown, though.
They've usually worked on one thing, and then they've done, like, they, like, work with third parties, like, on smaller titles
stuff.
You know, like, how they've cultivated, like, a lot of, like, smaller indie stuff.
I didn't realize that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's so cool. That's kind of been their two arms. But yeah, you're right. Like, I mean, obviously, like, probably after the last game, they've expanded. They're definitely like one of Sony's flagships now. I mean, with Insomniac and Naughty Dog, I mean, they're probably right there, right?
I mean, they're huge. They're definitely one of the biggest studios within. So that's what's up. All right, so let's cap this whole thing off. Now, I don't want to go through plot description of the new ones because most people have either played them or want to play them, but just to
Let's just talk about what it felt like to number one, I guess, like leading up to the game after it was initially revealed, like what we were thinking. And then like, you know, when we first picked up the game for the first time, just like feeling being there and feeling how God of War evolved as a franchise, like what that was like.
Yeah. So we started hearing about this game coming out and none of us, I think, had any idea. By the way, God of War PS4 was released in 2018, mm-hmm. And then Ragnarok later was in 2022. So God of War 2018.
And by the way, a second best-selling PS4 game at 19.5 million, just below Spider-Man.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So God of War 2018, and that's without any of that like Marvel power. Mm-hmm. Like, imagine how powerful that is. So this game, when we heard about it, we were like, wow, this is very. It was very. We didn't know what to make of it, but we knew that it was a very. I remember seeing the trailer, and I remember him in a boat, like a Viking looking boat or like a Norse looking boat, with Atreus, and they're both like rowing this boat. And then I remember him like, in the past, I've never really played, or I very rarely played a game where you had a sidekick and it doesn't suck.
Well, we had like a couple, right? I mean, we got The Last of Us with Ellie, and we had Elizabeth and BioShock Infinite. Those are two that come to my mind right away.
Yeah, I guess so. But they don't really do much. They're just there with you, right?
I mean, Ellie is like an Atreus. I mean, you don't directly command her, but she helps you out.
Oh, okay. I forgot all that. I forgot. Never mind. Her knife. Comment retracted. But the point being that they were making this game, and then even the Prince of Persia, now that I think about it, that one.
Oh, the Xbox 360 one?
Yeah. Yeah, Prince of Persia, subtitled, I guess, or whatever. The idea with this was like they wanted to make, when they were designing Atreus, they wanted to make him like completely not annoying to have around. Because the idea is like you were always playing God of War as a single character. So this is a very big change. And to have Atreus there with you at all times and you're in heated combat, and to make him not a liability, but rather nothing but a value add. I remember Barlog talking about that a lot, that was like a big focus. How do we make this guy nothing but beneficial and no negative side of it? And that was a big part of designing it. And so I saw this all, and I had no idea what to make of it. And then the buzz started coming, like, this game is amazing. You're going to see. It's going to be awesome. We started hearing that it was going to be a one continuous camera shot that took you through the entire game.
Well, I don't remember that. Like, that was actually discussed.
Oh, yeah. No, they were talking about how that was a thing. And there was some like preview videos that showed like how hard that was to do and all that kind of stuff. So it was all around the time of the release. They talked about all that different stuff. they had, you know, the voice acting, and they just did tons of mocap. I mean, the game was massively expensive. And in development, Corey Barlog had to fight off Sony Santa Monica's, because, you know, he wasn't really that much of an established resource at that point. Yeah. You know, he now he's the king. But at that point, he was trying to spend more money and more money, and they were getting really nervous, believe it or not. And he was like, you guys, if this game is going to be great, you have to do this. You have to do this. You have to do this. And there were a couple other worlds even in the game. That's why there were so many realms that you couldn't visit. He had wanted to build them, but they had to keep cutting back the scope. And he was fighting them off because the game kept getting delayed. He was fighting them off on the cutting back of scope, but he could only fight so much. And he got the budget expanded at least twice while he was working on the game. So he really does. Now he's the king. He deserves it because he fought for it. He earned it. When all the chips were down and everybody was like, this is going to be a huge failure and we're going to waste, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars or whatever it was, he was like, no, I'm telling you, I have the vision. This is going to be amazing. And that's what gave us this game. It truly was from his vision that it sprang forth.
Yeah, but you got to also give credit to Sony and the management because
absolutely,
it's one of the hardest things like that a manager can do is like you have like to for someone to come to you and like tell you no or fight for something and like you have to make the decision like
yes or no
like what do I do, you know? And
you don't want to be the guy that shut down a game and made a great game shitty by not giving just a little more money, but you also don't want to be the guy who just keeps writing checks in a money pit
and then it's a disaster. Yeah,
right. So that's that. You're right, they made just the right decisions, they cut it in just the right way. And the game came out, and when we got it, we started playing it, and it was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. It was like, it's one of the greatest games of all time. It just is. And to not have ever played any, and it really was, it even though the original God of War series that we spent most of this episode talking about, and this game, they're all action-adventure games. They all have puzzle elements, and you're walking through a world. They're all about fighting gods and being a god of war and, you know, gods versus mortals versus whatever. They all have, you know, magic and combat and weapons and all of these things in common. They're the same genre of game, but they almost feel like completely different game series.
Yeah.
When I play the current God of War, it doesn't feel at all like that game feels. To me,
like not even just the feel, but like just the atmosphere, the nuance,
nothing.
The performances, like it completely is like a evolution of the genre and the series all rolled into one. Yeah, right?
It's one of those
because
things.
It pushes the genre forward as well, right? I mean, it just does.
And so
not only gaming, you know, but
and everybody knows this, but the setup is obviously when Kratos left, we don't know all the details.
Yeah, we don't know how it's possible. What does it mean that he left? How are they separated from one another, right?
But we know that he's somehow entered the Norse mythology world. He met his wife, mm-hmm. married her, had a kid, Atreus, and then many years have gone by. He is now 14, 13, 12?
I'm not sure how old he's a teenager now in Ragnarok. I'm not sure.
It was a couple years earlier, I think.
You know, maybe 10, 12, something like that.
So yeah. But that's the plot of this entire game of God of War 2018 is basically his wife dies at the very beginning. You don't know why, you don't know how, etc. But, her last wishes are that her ashes are taken to the highest point in Midgard?
I think I don't think it's Midgard. I think it might be Jotunheim where she's from, right? She's like the last giant, right?
Right. So that's the mission. And in that mission, they come across, you know, this new pantheon of Norse gods and go up against them. And they don't really want to because that's the other thing. Kratos, he's very different. He's not looking for war. He wants peace. Yeah, the god of war has no interest.
Hidden, right? Like,
he has no interest in war, in killing gods, etc. And so it's like almost the complete polar, except for the fact that he's a huge badass. He's a complete opposite of who he was before because now he wants the opposite. He wants peace. He wants to just protect his family and have a quiet life and none of those things. But because of his experience, you get the best of both worlds. Because of his experience, he has this knowledge of what the world is all about, what life is all about, what it means to kill somebody, what it means to see the consequences of your actions as a leader. And he's learned from those. And now he's got this new sort of hothead kid who in some ways could end up like he was, and he's trying to stop it. You know, he's trying to, and in some ways he feels like he can't. And he loves this child. He loved his wife, and it's just really interesting. And it's a very new Kratos, and it really, if they'd put out a God of War successor now that was like that old style, it still probably would have been pretty good, but it wouldn't have been what this is.
Yeah, like I said, like after Ascension, that was, it wasn't the new novel. It was, the series was growing old. It was long in the tooth at that point. It was, people were kind of over it, I think, at that point.
And this game, the fact that it goes to this third person, very close, over the shoulder, almost like first person view, almost kind of like a Resident Evil view, but in an action adventure game. You're there with Kratos the whole time. And obviously that changes in 2022, in 2022's game, when obviously there are more characters you play. I'll leave it at that for this talk. But in that game, you're just with Kratos the entire journey. And if you never died, the camera would never cut. Mm-hmm. So it's really impressive what they did there. And it was really hard from a technical perspective. And I'm glad they did it, because it really did take games forward. And still, there's nothing like it. Like 4 years later, and there's nothing even close. Like in terms of like that type of game and that execution, there's nothing.
So. Also, the surprising thing was, like, I mean, I think we had seen this in one of the previews, but just like, you know, for example, the game opens with him taking his son on like a hunting trip. They're hunting this like, you know, magical elk, like, you know, animal, and there's the part where, you know, they, you know, he's training his son. His son makes the shot, you know, wounds the animal, but it's not quite dead yet. So, you know, he's teaching his son that, like, you know, you put it at, like, ended suffering, right? And once his son kills the animal, he's, you know, understandably, like, upset. He's crying, and, like, he wants to console his son, but he doesn't know how, you know, like, because he's sort of, like, the hard-walled-off, grizzled guy. And, like, you know, you see the part where he, like, reaches for his son's shoulder, but just kind of pulls back right before he actually would actually touch him and comfort him. Like, and you see that relationship evolve over the course of the game, like him wanting to show affection, wanting to show vulnerability, but like can't do it because he's never really done that before. And just like how, like, their journey, you know, which was like we talked about it, like the story, kind of just like The Last of Us, like the overarching, like, plot, like, on paper isn't that crazy or impressive. It's more like the journey along the way and all the things that happen and the real character moments and the human moments, the interplay between the characters, and how their relationship, the world molds their relationship, is what's so interesting about it, right?
And the best part of it too is it doesn't slouch on gameplay. Exactly, so for as much as, like, it would be a great TV show, maybe one day it will be, it really could be, and it could, if they had no story and you just played this game, I'd still play it. Mm-hmm. I'd still want to explore these worlds and kill these enemies and level these weapons up and have a blast with it. It can't be stressed enough how good the Leviathan Axe is. It's so good. Mm-hmm. I like it better than any Blades of Chaos that I've used in any game, including the Blades of Chaos in these games.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Leviathan Axe is the best weapon Kratos has ever wielded. Anyway.
Yeah, and like I said, one of the most satisfying but impressive in all of gaming history is recalling the axe and just everything that the feeling of the
I love. My favorite thing is to throw the axe and have it hit an enemy, and right when it hits the enemy, I recall it, and then I shoot it out again, and I'm doing like a yo-yoing with the axe into an enemy's head. Foom, thunk, foom, thunk, foom. That is I love that feeling. It just feels great.
Yeah, I think there was a move in the first game where, like, if you timed it just right, he would, like, grab the axe again and, like, spin around and, like, throw it even more powerful, like, right, if you timed it all right.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I bet you there's something like that we haven't unlocked yet, but, cool.
Yeah, and I remember, like, leading up to it, like, the E3s and, like, the reveals and, like, the chanting chorus, like, the, you know, like, how they would really do that. And, like, the first time it was revealed, I think it was probably, like, when they were in the boat and they encounter the world serpent and all that. Like,
oh, just
how
serpent,
epic
yeah.
that was, you know, like,
It's pretty impressive. And I have no doubt that they will do Egypt next.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Like I said, it was Joffe's original idea to do all of that, and I think I've heard Barlog say, like, we could easily take on additional pantheons. I just wonder if it's going to be Kratos or not.
Yeah, so what do you think? Does he make it out of this one alive? We haven't seen the end, so.
Right, I don't know. I think, yeah, we're you know, if you're listening to this and didn't listen to our review from last week, we are each, like, he's, like, about 7 hours in. I must be about 10. And we're very early in the story. Although it's not looking good for Kratos, but we don't know.
Well, I mean, just in terms of, like, what the game is alluding to, right? Like,
I think that he will survive it.
Okay.
That's my thinking.
I feel like, yeah, like, I just feel like, just for what he is, like, in terms of, like, PlayStation and Sony and all that, like, it's hard to imagine them just killing him off if they're planning more games, you know? Like,
yeah, yeah. And I have another reason, which I won't say here because it's probably a little spoilerific, but I have another reason why I think he won't die, which I'll share with you.
Okay.
And we'll share with all of you when we get there.
So where could he go next besides Egypt? Like, just, like, thinking about, like, the far-flung future.
Japan?
But, like, in terms of, like, gods, like...
Yeah, like, yeah, like Japanese gods.
Okay.
Isn't that a thing?
But isn't that... Is that, like, really that, like...
I don't know.
I mean, you kind of have to take, like, ancient religions, right? Like, you know, because... I was like, you're not going to go and, like, start killing Hindu gods because it's going to offend people, right? So,
I think I don't really know enough about mythology to know, but I would say that, like, you know, obviously,
because once you do Greek, Egyptian, and Norse, you've tackled the big three. That,
right.
Then, like, you're going to, like, Sumerian gods, or, you know, like, it's a step down in terms of pop culture after that.
It right? is, but I mean, I think you could do one where, like, you were taking on. I don't know. You'd have to go. I think you'd have to go Eastern. I really do. I think you'd have to start, like, wading somehow into Asia and mm-hmm. in the East. I think that'd be the most interesting place to go after Egypt. But I think we've got at least two more games.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, this is far off, right? I mean, yeah. if we even ever get there, but.
But it's amazing, man. It's an amazing journey for this game. And I'll tell you very clearly, there would not be this God of War. Of course, this is obvious, but if you think about it, there we would not be doing a retrospective of God of War, and we would not be talking about God of War 1, God of War 2, God of War 3, any of this shit, if it hadn't been for this resurgence that it's had.
Right, yeah, because we both said at the beginning, like, we liked the games.
They're fine.
We enjoyed them. Yeah. We, like, obviously one of the most best and most popular PlayStation 2 games and all that, like, but they were never, like, hey, we like the this is our jam, like, the we love it, like, can't stop talking about it, until God of War 2018. One thing I wanted to bring up, another iconic scene from the first game, you know, 2018, getting the Blades of Chaos for the first time. That very epic, like, where there's nothing, like, no spoken word, Kratos taking the bow, drifting down the river, you know, and just that whole lead up of, like, him drifting down the river all the way back home, and Athena appearing on the boat, you know, like, and him, you know, going and revealing that the blades were, like, sort of, like, under the house and, like, a trap compartment or whatever, and pulling them out, seeing Athena at the door. I mean, just epic. I mean, I was watching a little snippet recently. So Christopher Judge was, like, acting out that scene, you know, in the mocap stage, and, like, you know, like, knowing all the context of that whole scene and everything, like, he had, like, tears, like, coming down his eyes, like, acting that out, like, just because, you know, feeling what the character felt, essentially, that, like, sort of the monster almost, like, reemerging, you know what I mean? Like, so,
yeah.
pretty cool.
Yeah, there's so much, yeah, it's just, it mines, it's so brilliant because it mines beautifully from its past. And it reimagines what it needs to in a perfect
epic
match.
Moment, right? Because I don't know if everyone, like, saw that coming, that would really happen, right? That the Blades of Chaos will come back into this game.
I didn't think so.
Yeah.
I mean, we were told Leviathan Axe, it's the new deal, you know? Yeah. And then for those weapons to come in and then to have a skill tree and it be a full-fledged second weapon.
Yeah, towards
weapon.
The end of the game, yeah.
Yeah, and now we get to really, in the new game, fully experience them. And I understand there's a third weapon.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. Can't wait.
I guess you have to, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, you have to up the ante a little bit. Right?
You do. All right, man. Well, I think that that sums it up. That is an epic, man. I feel like I've been on an epic journey. Just walking, you know what I mean?
You've been on an odyssey?
I've been on an odyssey of sorts. I've been on an odyssey of sorts, for sure. What an amazing series. But it really, the original games have so much more significance through the mm-hmm. with an eye towards what it is now.
Yeah, you know? It's really amazing. Like, because you probably can't think of very many series that evolve in dramatic in such a dramatic fashion as this. I can't really think
especially
of it.
Especially not so successfully.
I mean, there are series that evolve over time and they become something different than what they start, but like the trajectory is sort of like
more gradual.
Right. Like and like
Mario.
And you could trace it through history and it feels natural. Where like I'm not saying that this is like it's still at its core the same type of game, but just how it went from, like I said, like a more juvenile type of game to way more mature. And then not only that, but then like just like how the gameplay was perfected, like and just pushed the genre forward, like it really is remarkable. Like there's not a lot of things that change this dramatically from one game to the next, like just over the course of one game. There's very few games that have done that, very few series that have
and
done
only,
that.
And only 5 years after, I mean, if you think about it, I felt like it was like 15 years between Ascension and this, but it was only 5 years.
True, yeah, Ascension, yeah.
So anyway, awesome. I couldn't have said it better, man. So on that note, we will be back next week with actually some more on God of War Ragnarok. We're going to actually dive into the hopefully the ending, or at least the second chunk of the game, if we don't get it all the way finished. It's a massive game. We are certainly, after waiting this long, taking our time with it. Mm-hmm. No reason to rush through it. If you want to contact us, you can go on Twitter at The Joy of Game and check us out there, or The Joy of Game, or email us at thejoyofgamingpodcast@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. My name is Rich Lepore.
I'm Brandon Brino.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Bye, guys.